Hello, and welcome back to Automotive, the Automotive Engineering History Podcast. For this week's episode, I'm going to be talking about the Ferrari P race cars, P standing for prototype. And these are the highest end Ferrari race cars made for endurance racing. In fact, the Ferrari P cars, or at least specifically one of the Ferrari P cars, is probably most well known thanks to it being the competition for the GT40 in 1966, when Ford would win their first 24 hours of Le Mans. So movies like Ford vs. Ferrari brought these pretty incredible race cars to the public eye. This episode is going to function chronologically, starting with the very first Ferrari P car made, and finishing with the latest one, which was actually a while ago, but we will get to that in due time. The creation of the Ferrari P car was thanks to the FIA creating a prototype class for the World Sports Car Championship in 1963. Due to this being a prototype class, there was no homologation requirements. In other race car classes, there's a thing called homologation, which essentially says that a certain number of road-going versions of the race car need to be produced in order for the car to compete. This is really great on the consumer side, because that essentially means we get road-legal versions of incredible race cars, but on the manufacturer side, it's a little bit annoying, because this requirement takes away resources that normally would be put towards the race versions of the car. So, what is important about this being a prototype car is that this was Ferrari with no limitations. They didn't need to worry about making road legal versions of the car or a certain number of these cars. They only made three of them, and so they could really put all of their resources, all of the money, all of their expertise, everything they had behind just a few cars and really make these cars incredible. The very first P car would be called the Ferrari 250P. A quick little side note I just want to mention is that this car is not related to the 250 GT car, despite them having similar names. Completely different cars. The reason it was called a 250 is it was in regards to the displacement of a single cylinder in cubic centimeters. So the 250P had a V12 with each one of those cylinders displacing 250 cubic centimeters. The car was an open cockpit, mid-engine, rear-wheel drive design. It utilized a tubular space frame chassis, which provides a very rigid chassis, but it's also pretty light. It had double wishbone suspension, a rack and pinion steering system, which is considered the best steering system out there, and it was also given disc brakes on all four wheels. In other words, for the time, this car was given pretty much the top end everything, from chassis to brakes to steering system. It was really a no-compromise car. As I previously mentioned, it was powered by a longitudinally mounted V12 engine. This engine would be fed with 6 Weber carburetors and pushed out right around 310 horsepower. It was naturally aspirated. There was no forced induction given to it. Transmission, 5-speed manual. And what happens when Ferrari builds a no-compromise race car? Well, you'd expect it to do pretty well. And it did. It had instant success. In 1963, the car would take wins at the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
49 cars get off the mark in the Le Mans 24-hour race, with Ferrari's hot favorites to make this their fourth successive win in this grueling test of endurance and speed.
the 12 hours of Sebring, the 1,000-kilometer Nürburgring race, and the Canadian Grand Prix in the first year it was made. So, unsurprisingly, to be honest, I mean, it is Ferrari, and it is a prototype car, it did really well. The following year, this car was changed a little bit. And interestingly, there were actually kind of two different cars made. These cars were not next-generation P cars, but they did have different engines. They would be called the 275P and the 330P. Again, these numbers are just relating to the displacement of a single cylinder in cubic centimeters. Despite the different engines, they were very similar. They had the same chassis, and they shared basically all other components, but there were different engine options. The smaller engine, the 275, had a displacement, a total displacement, of about 3.3 liters. The 330 had a total displacement of about 4 liters. Also, these were completely different engines being produced by different designers and used in different cars previously to them being put into the 275P and the 330P. Why Ferrari decided to create essentially two different cars with completely different engines? It all came down to driver preference. The 275 had less power, right around 320 horsepower, but it also weighed less. The 330 had more power, but it also weighed more. With the bigger engine, the power was right around 370 horsepower. So, each car provided a different benefit. The 275P being lighter made it more agile, and it was a little bit better in the corners. The 330P, on the other hand, with its higher power output, was a little bit faster in the straights. But because it weighed more, it wasn't as nice in the corners. It didn't handle as well. So, which car was used, or more specifically, which engine was used, depended on what the driver wanted. Engine swaps were very common, and so was whatever the driver was feeling. Do you want a little more speed in the corners? You want a little more speed in the straights? Just swap the engines. It's time-consuming and maybe a little bit expensive, but having that variable to change probably aided the car a lot depending on the circuit. If it's a circuit with a lot of straights, put the bigger engine in. If it's a really curvy circuit with lots of slow corners, put the smaller engine in. So really, the car can be tuned to fit the circuit by just changing the engine. The actual weight difference was pretty small, right around 30 kilograms or 66 pounds. But these cars didn't weigh much to begin with, and so 66 pounds, relatively, is a pretty big change. And these cars continued the success found by the 250P. They took a 1-2-3 victory at the 1964 24 Hours of Le Mans. Interestingly, the first place car was a 275P with a smaller engine, and second and third place were 330Ps with a little bit bigger engine. So which one was better? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of variables, including driver and reliability. But I do think it's interesting that the smaller engined car actually took first place. And well, when you're on a roll, why not keep the ball going? The next year, the P cars were again upgraded. This would be a next generation, and this would be the year that the 275P2 and the 330P2 were made. These cars would be lower, lighter, and more aerodynamic thanks to a rework of the body. The same engines were used, but both received very, very massive upgrades, becoming quad cam engines, essentially dual overhead cam engines, meaning that each bank of cylinders had two camshafts, so the total number of camshafts on the engine was 4, so you could call this a quad cam engine, or you could kind of call this a dual overhead cam engine. 4 V12s or V6s or V8s, those are the same kind of engine. With this upgrade, power was pushed for the 275 P2 up to 350 horsepower. The power of the 330 P2 was pushed up to 410 horsepower. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but still, they found success. I mean, if you have a winning formula, and the only thing you really change is you add more power, most likely, the winning is going to continue. It's not guaranteed, you could break something, but if you do everything right, it's usually a pretty good formula. And they found success. They won at Daytona, they won at Monza, and they won at the Nürburgring 1000 kilometer, just to name a few of the successes these cars found. Interestingly, there would be a customer version of this car sold. This version was called the 365 P2 and would be powered by a single overhead cam V12. Now, an important thing to understand at this time with the second generation of Ferrari P cars, this was also the time that Ford was starting to nip at the heels of Ferrari at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Up to this point, Ford had entered the 24 Hours of Le Mans multiple times, but never really found success. But they were there, and Ferrari was well aware of the efforts by Ford to beat them. If you don't know the story of Ford versus Ferrari, a very, very quick summary is Ford wants to buy Ferrari. Ferrari seems interested, but backs out last minute. Ford wants to get revenge by beating them at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Up to this point, though, they've had no chance, and Ferraris have just been destroying everybody at the 24 Hours of Le Mans with their P cars. However, in 1966, the next generation of P car was coming out, and this would be the 330 P3, and it was given a lot of upgrades. Ferrari didn't want to slow down their progress with Ford right behind them, so they gave the car fuel injection. They used fiberglass doors, which was a very first for Ferrari. Previous to this, all other P cars used aluminum in their body. The P3 would use fiberglass, and this saved over 200 pounds compared to the P2. The seating position in the P3 was center, but a little bit to the right because it gave an advantage due to most circuits being driven in the clockwise direction. And so all of this really seems like great upgrades. They made it lighter, they gave it fuel injection, which improved efficiency. It was still fast, it was supposed to be more efficient than the GT40, so it would have to stop less for fuel, because it just didn't use as much fuel, and so everything was looking really good for Ferrari to beat Ford yet again. However, they decided to make one change, which in retrospect was a terrible change, but they had no way of knowing this. They changed the transmission. Specifically, they changed it to a ZF 5-speed gearbox. So it was the same type of transmission, but it was made by a different company. It was made by someone outside of Ferrari. Up to this point, all other P cars had transmissions that were built in-house at Ferrari. But for this generation, they decided to go with an outside sourced transmission. And in the long run, that was a terrible idea. At the 24 Hours of Le Mans in 1966, the Ferrari P3s would be very competitive with the Ford GT40s. It would be a back and forth fight.
The red cars are Ferraris. That's an Alpine cutting in front of the Ford GT. Another Ferrari, and the number 2 Ford GT still in the lead.
And there was no clear victor until early morning when the Ferrari P3s had their gearboxes fail. The first failure occurred at 3 a.m. and the second failure occurred at 4 a.m. There were other Ferraris on the field, including an open cockpit version of the P3 raced by the North American Racing Team, a long-tail P2, and a P2/P3 hybrid, as well as a P2 Spider. but by this time, all of those cars were out, and with the transmission failures of the P3s brought by Ferrari themselves, there were no more Ferraris, and the Ford had won at the 24 hours of Le Mans.
First place, the number 2 Ford GT. Second place, the number 1 Ford GT. Third place, the number 5 Ford GT. An authoritative win for the American challengers.
So if you think about it, the only reason that Ferrari lost was because a non-Ferrari transmission broke. It's really unfortunate, if you're a fan of Ferrari, that is. If mechanical issues could be removed from this race, the P3 and GT40 matchup is actually a really interesting one. The GT40 was much faster than the P3 in the straights, clocking a top speed of 210 miles per hour. The P3, on the other hand, could hit a top speed of about 190 miles per hour, but it was lighter and more agile, having an advantage in the corners. I also mentioned the fact that it's more efficient, so they didn't need to stop as often to refuel. So, if it wasn't for the transmission failures, there's a very good chance that Ferrari could have beaten the Fords yet again. And this brings us to the 330 P4. And this is the important race car. This is the one that Ferrari built for their comeback. They had just been kind of humiliated by Ford. Ford got a 1-2-3 victory at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. The 24 Hours of Le Mans at the time was Ferrari's race. They beat everybody there. And then Ford came in and destroyed them. So the P4 was a very important car. It needed to claim the 24 Hours of Le Mans victory back for Ferrari. Only 3 P4s would be made, and 1 P3, which was the previous generation, that would be upgraded to the P4 specs. So there were kind of 4 P4s, but one was a hybrid thing. These cars were again powered by V12s that pumped out 450 horsepower and only weighed 800 kilograms. That's 1,763 pounds. This car used the fuel injection system that was originally fitted to the P3. The P4 would also be given an upgrade, with the engine actually utilizing 3 valves per cylinder, and so this just allowed the engines to breathe better and make more power. This idea of 3 valve cylinder heads actually came from Formula One racing. So really, they were taking the technology from other racing series and putting it into this car to really make it the best it could be. The P4 would look a lot like the P3. In fact, the P3 looked a lot like the P2, and the P2 looked a lot like the P1. Their bodywork wasn't changed all that much. But mechanically speaking, it was definitely an upgraded car. It also had a shorter wheelbase, but was wider to allow for the use of wider tires. Therefore, more grip, so faster acceleration. Always a big plus to have some big fat rubbers on the back of your car. The location of the brakes were actually changed to allow them to have better cooling, which is also very important if you're constantly slamming on your brakes to slow down for corners. You really don't want your brakes getting hot, because if they get hot, they no longer function as brakes. So brake cooling, very important, and was an upgraded feature of the P4. Also, very, very importantly, the transmission was changed to an in-house 5-speed because of the previous transmission failure of the ZF. So very understandably, Ferrari ditched that out-of-house transmission and built their own. That way, if it went wrong, they could just blame themselves and nobody else. With this new 330 P4, the year started out really well. The first major race of the season, the 24 Hours of Daytona, 2 330 P4s were entered, and the one converted P3/P4 was also entered. At this 24 Hours of Daytona, they would take home a 1-2-3 victory, effectively flipping Ford's achievement of the previous year on its head. In fact, a picture was taken of these three Ferraris crossing the finish line at the same time to counter the famous image of the three GT40s at Le Mans taken the previous year. However, it was 24 Hours of Daytona, not 24 Hours of Le Mans, so, you know, it's not quite exactly the revenge that they were looking for, but it's certainly a great start. Especially because the 24 Hours of Daytona is part of what's called the Triple Crown. The Triple Crown for endurance racing requires winning at the 24 Hours of Daytona, the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and the 12 Hours of Sebring. So, with the win at Daytona, the Ferraris were one-third of the way there to a Triple Crown victory, which is a really big deal. To get more of an insight on the differences between the GT40 and the 330P4, we actually have a unique opportunity because a man named Chris Amon was actually driving for Ford in 1966, but then started driving for Ferrari in 1967. So he got to drive both cars. And his view on each of these cars is shown in the following quote. Quote, "The P4 was a very pleasant car to drive, as it was a great deal more nimble than the Fords I was used to. Although it lacked the ultimate top-end pace of the 7-liter Ford, it gave you the feeling that you could drive it to the maximum for the whole race, which really wasn't the case for the Fords, especially the brakes." End quote. And so, really, the Fords were kind of brutes. They had a lot of power, but they were kind of fragile in some way, and not all that well engineered. While the Ferraris weren't as powerful, but they were definitely the pinnacle of automotive engineering. They were really well-designed cars. The 330P4s would compete in races outside of the Triple Crown, obviously. One of these races was the Monza 1000 kilometer, where the Ferraris would take a 1-2 victory. The main strategy for Ferraris for the 1967 Le Mans was to do as much testing as possible before the race. That's the big race. 1967 Le Mans is the one where Ferrari needs to come back and win and claim that victory and show that the Fords winning was just a fluke. And because the reason they lost the previous year was because of reliability issues, it makes sense to do as much testing as possible to confirm that everything in the car was working well. Nothing was going to break and make them lose the race again. With this testing, it really seemed like the P4s would be competitive, again, as long as nothing broke. However, sadly for Ferrari, the car would fail to meet its goal and would lose to the GT40 yet again. It would be really close. The cars would not lose due to reliability issues. They would finish the race and claim second and third right behind the GT40, so it was really close. But ultimately, it was Ford who won the race, and in some ways, that's kind of all that matters. One of the most interesting things I found during the research of this car was the fact that Ferrari actually won the 1967 Sports Car World Championship in the P4. So, if you looked at the entire, well, championship, where the 24 Hours of Le Mans is part of it, the P4s are way better cars. They won the championship. Yet, that really, I guess, just shows how important the 24 Hours of Le Mans is. That single victory taken by Ford outshone the entire championship win taken by Ferrari. So, I mean, I guess 24 Hours of Le Mans, big deal. The win of the Sports Car World Championship in 1967 would be the 12th time that Ferrari would win this title in just 14 years. So Ferrari was incredibly dominant in endurance racing. However, they kind of got a little bit of a curse on them. They have never won another 24 Hours of Le Mans since losing to Ford in 1966. They have never won it again. Unfortunately, to rub a little bit of salt in the wound of losing the 24 Hours of Le Mans, Racing regulations would change in 1968, limiting engine displacement to 3 liters, making the P4 unable to race. That just kind of sucks. I mean, they're like, you got a pretty good car, but guess what? It can't race anymore. Too bad. So that's pretty rough for Ferrari, on top of losing to Ford. The P cars would continue on in a little bit of a different form. Ferrari was not involved in the 1968 racing as a protest to this rule change that occurred the year before and made their cars not eligible for racing. Of the three P4s, one was retired and the other two were converted to compete in Can-Am racing, the racing for banned race cars, as I like to call it. But in Can-Am racing, these Ferraris would fail to be competitive against the much more powerful and lighter competition. After the failure of Can-Am racing, the two Ferraris were sold to privateers. Ferrari would return to racing after boycotting for 1 year. They would develop what was called the 312P. This was really an entirely different car. It was basically a F1 Ferrari 312 with a prototype body stuck onto it. It was powered by a flat 12 engine instead of a V12 engine, and it did find success in several races. In fact, these cars would take home the 1972 World Championship for Makers. This car would also take part in the 1973 24 Hours of Le Mans and finish second. Ouch. But that would be the end of the prototype cars. Not because they weren't successful, not because Ferrari didn't want to continue racing them, but because Fiat, which was the chief investor in Ferrari, told Ferrari to abandon endurance racing and instead focus on Formula One. So really, Ferrari didn't have the choice. It was Fiat that sadly ended the dominant run of these cars. So while, yes, Ford puts a bit of a scar, a bit of a mark on the legacy of these P cars, they were incredible. If you just looked at championship wins, I don't think there's any other car that was as good at the time. They were incredible, they were simplistic but well-built, they were reliable, at least for the most part, just don't use out-of-house transmissions, I guess. And so it is kind of a sad and fizzly end to these incredible Ferrari prototype racing cars. That's going to be it for this episode on the Ferrari P-Cars. I hope you enjoyed. If you'd like to support the podcast, the number one way to do that is to leave a review or follow the podcast on whatever platform you are listening. I really appreciate if you do that. I put a lot of work into these, and getting some feedback on them is always wonderful. If you want a little bit more about the cars that I talk about in these podcast episodes, you're welcome to follow me on my social media. My Instagram is automotive.podcast. My Facebook is at Automotive Podcast, and my Twitter is at Automotive Pod. I post car facts, some historical photos, little tidbits. So if you want just a little bit extra, a little bit of seasoning sprinkled on top, go ahead and follow me on those platforms. You're also welcome to request any episodes that you want to hear through social media. I'm always happy to provide you with an episode that you want to hear. Other than that, again, I hope you enjoyed, and I will see you next week.